From Vermont Public Radio, this is The Frequency. I'm Henry Epp.
And I'm Anna Van Dyne. It's Friday, May 15th. Today on the podcast, school budgets.
For me, anyway, to talk about something which may leave schools with insufficient resources to do the job that we've asked them to do is just unacceptable.
First, today's headlines.
Here in Vermont, the number of people hospitalized with COVID-19 and the number of people who've died with the disease barely changed in the past week. 5 people are hospitalized, 53 people have died, and 792 people have recovered. The state recorded 3 new cases yesterday. Vermont has conducted over 22,500 tests, and nearly 20% of those happened in the past week.
And calls to Vermont's child protection line have plummeted over the last few weeks. Last month, calls were down 46% from the same period last year, according to the Department for Children and Families.
Christine Johnson is a DCF deputy commissioner. She says the drop in calls is likely due to the stay-at-home order. Children aren't being seen by teachers, healthcare professionals, and others who are required to report suspected abuse cases.
The call volume is no indication that we are that there is less child abuse going on. It could very likely be the opposite.
According to the department, 83% of the calls they receive come from mandated reporters. Vermont's child protection line is 1-800-649-5285.
Some non-tenure-track faculty in the College of Arts and Sciences at UVM say they're facing a 25% cut in pay and course loads, and some of those faculty are protesting. Spanish instructor Rachel Montesano says the pay cut will hit in the fall, but her reduction in teaching hours won't come until the spring semester.
I'm a single parent, and that will put me into the realm of food insecurity and housing insecurity.
Montesano and others are calling for UVM administrators with higher salaries to take deeper pay cuts. In a statement, the university says it's adjusting course loads based on student demand and says that lecturers' pay rates are not being cut. And it notes there are no cuts to benefits.
The world of K-12 education is also thinking about money. To address the school funding crunch, the Scott administration dropped a bombshell proposal on Thursday. The governor wants school districts to scrap the budgets voters approved in March and re-vote on new ones this summer. Here's reporter Peter Hirschfeld.
Governor Phil Scott's commissioner of finance, Adam Gresham, struck an upbeat tone at the outset of his Zoom meeting with lawmakers on Thursday morning.
Thank you for inviting us to speak to your committee. This should be fun.
Gresham was no doubt speaking with tongue in cheek because as a former lawmaker himself, he knew full well the proposal he was about to unveil would meet with stiff resistance from his former colleagues. Fiscal analysts are now projecting a $167 million shortfall in next year's education fund, and Gresham says the Scott administration wants to tear up the school budgets that local voters approved on town meeting day and present pared-down spending plans to residents later this summer.
And I don't think I'm going too far out on a limb to suggest that the budget votes would have been different or the budgets themselves would have been different if voters knew then what we know now. And I think the tax consequences of the approved budgets are radically different from what they were when voters went to town meeting.
If school districts don't reduce spending in response to the revenue shortfall, then Gresham says the state will have to raise property taxes by as much as 14% next year to fill the impending gap.
I'm confident that Vermonters will understand the challenges we face, and I think they'll appreciate the initiative to let them participate in the solution.
Lawmakers do not appear to share Gresham's optimism. Shelburne Representative Kate Webb chairs the House Education Committee. She says the closure of schools and the advent of remote learning have already thrown a measure of chaos into the education system.
With the concept of sending voters back to re-vote budgets sounds like, instead of stabilizing, contributes to even more chaos.
And lawmakers reject the idea that property tax rates will have to rise next year to accommodate the grim revenue forecasts. Calais Representative Janet Ansel, who chairs the House Ways and Means Committee, says her panel has already endorsed a framework that would keep next year's property tax rates at what they would have been prior to COVID-19.
The solution to 21 isn't going to be increased property taxes. We're not sure what it's going to be, but it isn't going to be increased property taxes.
Lawmakers are contemplating one scenario in which Vermont uses a sort of fiscal gymnastics that would allow the state to use some of the $1.25 billion in federal coronavirus relief funds to bail out the education fund. Federal rules prohibit states from using those funds to offset revenue shortfalls due to COVID-19, but legislative analysts say there may be a workaround. Lawmakers are also holding out hope that Congress will change guidance for relief funds in forthcoming legislation, as many states, including Vermont, have requested. Regardless of what happens at the federal level, Ansel says disruptions in students' lives over the past 2 months will only intensify the jobs of schools and educators next year.
And for me, anyway, to talk about something which may leave schools with insufficient resources to do the job that we've asked them to do is just unacceptable.
But Secretary of Education Dan French says the viability of Vermont's education system requires a prompt reckoning with the new financial realities that all sectors of the economy now face.
I can't help but think that we're at a moment in history where the system's going to have to evolve, meaning the K-12 system. And to think that there wouldn't be a spending reconciliation somehow in this sector of our economy and our society where every other aspect of our society is learning how to navigate this, I think is unrealistic.
Lawmakers say schools couldn't revise next year's budgets even if elected officials unanimously supported the concept. That's because most districts have already signed collective bargaining agreements with their local teachers' unions, and they say unions are unlikely to agree to renegotiate for lower salaries and benefits. Don Tinney, president of the Vermont NEA, later confirmed their hunch to VPR.
I don't foresee that happening at all.
Lawmakers also questioned the logistics of school budget votes during a summer of social distancing, to which Adam Gresham offered this solution.
There's a primary coming up in August, right? So that could be a time that actually might get turnout for a primary.
The administration, though, will first have to turn out votes for its proposal in the legislature, which will be a very heavy lift given the reaction so far. For VPR News, I'm Peter Hirschfeld.
Beginning this weekend, almost anyone in Vermont who wants to get tested for COVID-19 can do so, except those most vulnerable to infection, people in nursing homes and people incarcerated in the state's prisons, places where the state's biggest outbreaks have occurred. Here's reporter Emily Corwin.
Since early April, the state's policy has been to test people inside residential facilities like prisons and nursing homes only after someone at the facility, A, has symptoms, and then B, tests positive for COVID-19. At first, state officials said this was because of a lack of testing capacity. Here's Human Services Secretary Mike Smith at a press conference on April 10th.
We have often gone beyond the CDC guidelines in terms of testing as we have moved forward. But the fact remains that our testing capabilities are not unlimited.
Recently, things have changed. The state's public health officials are now struggling to hit their goal of testing 1,000 people every day. Now, anyone, even people without symptoms, can sign up for a test at one of the state's pop-up sites. And public officials' explanations have shifted for why nursing home patients and inmates can't also get tested.
I would say that we probably would have enough tests available if that were our chosen tack.
Health Commissioner Mark Levine said at a Monday press conference the reason now is that the CDC hasn't recommended universal testing at facilities. He went on to repeat something Secretary Smith had said previously.
Sure, we could do that, but that would give us the reassurance on that one day that a facility had no infections. And that could change within a day or two.
That makes no sense, either from a moral standpoint or from a public health perspective.
James Lyle is executive director of the Vermont ACLU.
These are potential tinderboxes. We know that people can be contagious before they're symptomatic. Why wait? Why wait for an outbreak?
A third of the state's COVID-19 cases and half of its COVID-19 deaths have taken place inside facilities. In one of the state's six prisons, 67 inmates and staff have tested positive. Roughly 180 residents and staff of Vermont residential facilities have also tested positive. Yet visitation bans mean residents can't just go get tested at a pop-up site like other Vermonters. Long-term care ombudsman Sean Londrigan is tasked with advocating for residents in Vermont's elder care facilities. He calls the state's decision not to universally test all facility residents a little disconcerting.
And we've seen that in Vermont and in other states, you know, really significant incidents happening in nursing homes. So I guess I don't completely understand, you know, why they wouldn't do more testing in long-term care facilities.
According to the Associated Press, the White House recommended during a phone call to governors on Monday that states begin testing all residents and staff at long-term care facilities. To date, that policy hasn't changed in Vermont. For VPR News, I'm Emily Corwin.
And Henry, because I know you're keeping up with the most important issues in the region, you may recall that last month the state asked people to put their trash out the night before pickup. Garbage collectors were starting their routes earlier so they could pick up all the extra trash generated by people staying at home. But the Fish and Wildlife Department says that in, quote, bear country, putting bins out early attracts, you guessed it, bears. Henry, I'm not sure if your Burlington apartment qualifies as bear country, but anyone who does live in those areas should go back to putting trash out in the mornings.
All right, good to know. Well, the Eye on the Sky forecast for today, cloudy with rain showers, highs in the 50s and 60s. Thanks for listening to The Frequency. If you have feedback for the show or just want to get in touch, email us at thefrequency@vpr.org.
We had reporting today from Amy Kolb-Noyes, Emily Corwin, and Peter Hirschfeld. Our music is by Blue Dot Sessions, and our executive producer is Mark Davis. I'm Anna Van Dyne.
And I'm Henry Epp. Talk to you on Monday.